Okay, by the way, if you want to follow these shiurim, they are on YU Torah. For review purposes, it might be useful. It's filling in some of the gaps that I have in the shiurim that I've been giving over the years. So use that as a resource. It's there. In terms of review, when you get to the point, if you're not sure about something that we did in class, or you're not sure how it went, go to yutorah.org and all will be revealed, hopefully. Now, in terms of today, chapter 16. Before I do chapter 16, let me give these out, which this is kind of a, what Shimshon did list. You want to pass those down that way. That should be enough. Yeah, that should be enough. Okay, so if you have the paper in front of you, some of these events you already know. Okay, this is covering chapter 14 and 15. Perek Yudalet we did last time. And again, a number of you were not here. You were already wending your way to wherever you were for the Passover festival. And you may have missed these particular details. So this is a cause, an event with the effect. Okay, kind of an interesting presentation, which I found in a particular sefer, and I thought was a nice way of expressing it to you. I hope everybody has a copy. Alright, if there are spare copies, please pass them back. Thank you very much. So just run through this very quickly. Marrying the Philistine woman, that was the beginning of chapter 14. We've had a big discussion about were they converted, were they not converted, etc., etc. Okay. And as I put in the effect column, after conversion, according to the Rambam, she is right in his eyes. Beginning of subterfuge, right? That was the expression that was used. He saw and he married her. Sorry? Yeah. So that was the story with the Philistine woman at the beginning. And of course, subterfuge meaning that he used it as an excuse to attack the Plishtim. Okay, that we know. B, the carcass with the lion. And that's the story again we saw. Okay, and again, the sign that Hashem was with him also. He withheld this information from his parents, a sign of possibly tzniut. Didn't want to upset his parents too much about what he was getting up to in terms of his strength. Did not want them to sort of, they were worried about him anyway because he was involved in Philistine society, but there was a limit to what he wanted to place upon them as a kind of burden. C is the riddles. Remember the story that he set these puzzles, whatever they were, and the effect was to engage the Plishtim in a personal struggle, becomes excuse to attack them when they cheat, and he kills 30 men. All right. And remember, what Shimshon is doing is always looking at this as a personal war. This is a war which he's trying to take away from the Jewish people and putting it on his own shoulders. And eventually, as we said, they accept that the Plishtim, they start calling him Shimshon HaTimni. They don't even call him Shimshon HaYudi or Shimshon HaIvri. He's not called Shimshon the Hebrew. He's called Shimshon the Timni because that's where he married the first lady, the first woman, who, remember, was eventually killed as... actually, that's the beginning of chapter 15, which you will read. Not very nice people, these Plishtim. D is the foxes, this famous story, which I'm not going to go through in the text, but is yet another example of what Shimshon decided to do to bring his own personal vendetta against the Plishtim. So he took 300 foxes and he tied their tails together. Do not try this at home under any circumstance whatsoever. They will not be very kind to the foxes. I know in England they hunt them and they try and kill these little vermin, mites or whatever you want to call them, but they are quite dangerous. Shimshon, seemingly how he actually tamed them to do this, I do not know, but he got hold of 300 of them, tied their tails together, and put a flame, something flaming between the tails. How he did it, I don't know what knot he used, I'm not even sure how you could do this with foxes' tails, I really don't know, but this apparently had its effect, and he burnt down a whole field of wheat, and the Plishtim were mad at him yet again. And you'll see in the effect, the punishment for taking his wife away, he did this because they, the first wife that he married, was eventually killed. They were burnt alive in their home. Not very nice. And Shimshon saw this as a way of punishing the Plishtim by bringing a serious fire against their crops, right? And number two on the right-hand side is a sign to the Plishtim that they are devious as foxes. Obviously, the idea is you're sending a message. Why foxes as opposed to anything else to set fire? Just set fire with your own match. The answer is, though, that this was a message to the Plishtim that Shimshon understood. They were sly like foxes, right? Expression. And number three, he is still helped by Hashem. It's obviously he could not have done it without God's help. So that's also the sign of the story. And it's an excuse to attack them again afterwards because they kind of tried to do revenge against him. And he is there to try and bring revenge against them. The men, section E, the men of Yehuda, this is part of chapter 15, they cannot understand what Shimshon is doing because they now feel that he's not really one of us, he's really one of himself, he's not even one of the Plishtim, but they're worried that Shimshon is going to bring problem back to Yehuda, to Judea, in other words, into Israel, and they agree to hand him over. Of course, when he's handed over to the Plishtim, he kills another 1,000 Plishtim. Okay, he's sort of into doing stuff here. As it says in section F, he takes the jawbone of a donkey. Don't ask me why he would take that particular item. The donkey had been dead. It's got a jawbone, which is obviously very sharp. Okay, and he used it like a sword or like a baseball bat or whatever metaphor you want to give. And he smashed these people to smithereens. Really unbelievable stories. The final story in chapter 15 is a story about Shimshon being very thirsty, and it's almost put there by the by, but it seems to be a story about Shimshon sort of overstepping the mark. He's overstepped the mark because he seems to now be sort of, the word used in English is cavalier. Cavalier means he's just going ahead and doing whatever he wants and feels that he could literally conquer the world. And he's given a bit of a reminder of who he is. And there's a strange story there that he has a tremendous thirst, and this thirst is eventually quenched. You know, he does find water, but until he finds water, he's almost at the point of death. He's being reminded by God that as great, as strong, as powerful as he is, he's still a human being. All right? And I think there's a whole story to be looked at in that particular discussion there. And it does mention also he was a judge for 20 years. So apart from doing all this stuff with the Plishtim, he went home and spent most of the 20 years, not all of the 20 years, but most of the 20 years judging like the judges did till now, disputes between neighbours and who knows what, and that was what he did when he wasn't out, sort of destroying, terminating the lives of many Plishtim. Okay, Shimshon was a pretty awesome sort of guy. So that's basically the summary of the events and the effects through, starting from chapter 14 through chapter 15. Okay, any questions on that? I think that sort of covers the bases. If you want to look at it, as I said, in a bit more detail, read chapter 15 and all will be revealed. Or something will be revealed. What I want to do today is look at chapter 16. Because chapter 16 is the climax of the whole story. Shimshon, at this point in time, is a real pain in the side of the Plishtim. The Jews don't seem to understand him either. But as far as he's concerned, he is achieving success with a problem. We saw this last time in the name of Rabbi Dessler. Rabbi Dessler explains that he became overconfident with what he was doing. When he saw something and he thought that it was right, he assumed that this was the way to go. And he was relying on his own judgment and not necessarily being as connected to God as he was expected to be. As a result, Shimshon has this very, very strange relationship with Delilah. Delilah is someone, the word Delilah comes from the expression dal, mikimi me'afar dal, words that we said a lot in the last couple of weeks. God raises me'afar from the earth, dal, someone who is poor. Dalut means to be poor, poverty. Okay? So dal, Delilah, she basically made Shimshon into a poor person. She basically took him down to the level of losing his strength completely. How she did this is something that we will see in a few minutes. All right. So let's have a look at Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16. Okay. Any questions on what we said till now? Any reaction to what we saw? Again, by this time, I hope it's clear what Shimshon's game plan really was. Okay. The question, of course, that we have to deal with is the source of his strength. Right, the world talks about the hair, the strength in his locks, taltalim. The problem is that really the case? Is that what was Shimshon's real gevura? Right, it was obviously an outward manifestation of his strength. But the question, of course, is it really where his strength was concentrated? Was it, in other words, an outward sign, or was it where the strength really was? And obviously, we're going to suggest through Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16, that there was more to his strength than we realize. Alright, so I hope that's clear. Please follow. Perek Tet Zayin, this is one of the most famous stories in the whole of Tanakh. The first couple of psukim are just Shimshon creating more havoc for the Plishtim. First three psukim. Vayelech Shimshon, you need to follow. Azata, it goes back to Gaza. Now again, Gaza is always a place which is somewhere where we are never far away from Gaza. And there's a history to that, okay? And you know, you go back 3,000 years, you've got Shimshon again interacting with Gaza. It doesn't go away. Vayashav isha zona vayavo eleh. He was now so confident that he saw this woman who was a harlot, who was a prostitute. Vayavo eleh, and he came to her straight away. He took her again. According to the Rambam, he would have converted her. If you want to go in that direction and you feel that is correct, fine. You know what we suggested last time, that Shimshon was committing what we call a Veira Lishma. Another way of looking at it, meaning that he was doing something wrong, but for the sake of God. The problem is that this is a bit more brazen than it was the first time. The first woman that he saw, he didn't just walk in and take her, as they say. He went with his parents, and it was much more of a procedure. This was, you know, sort of, hello, I'm here, and I'm going to take you. Did he marry her? Did he actually have some sort of marriage with her? According to some commentaries, yes. The way it's presented over here, my own feeling is very unlikely. But that's just the way it seems. Now, Bet. Lazatim Lemo. He did this, and it was told to the people of Gaza. Bar Shimshon Hena. Shimshon is him. And of course, everybody hates Shimshon. Vayasobo Vayervolo Kola Laila B'shah Ha'ir. They made a trap for him. So apparently Gaza had gates. Okay, not like nowadays, it's an open city. In those days it was surrounded, probably much smaller than it is today. And it had walls and a gate. So they waited for Shimshon to come out. They were going to capture. Vayitcharshu kol alayla lemor, ador aboke v'harag nu. Basically, we'll wait till the morning and we will kill it. So that was the plan, and it's a very simple plan. Shimshon is never, ever simple. Gimel. So Shimshon woke up at midnight and he realized that everything's very quiet. He realized there was trouble. So what did he do? He got up at the middle of the night. He basically lifted up the gates with the doorposts. Incredible weight, which for him seemingly was no effort. Took it with the whole bolt of the door. By Yosem al Ketefav, and put it on his shoulders, carried away the gates of Gaza. Famous story. Bialeim Rosh Ahar, Hashem Penei Chevron. He took them to the top of a mountain which was overlooking Chevron. If you leave Chevron and you go south, west, you do come to Gaza. It's one of the ways to go from Chevron to Beersheva. Is a very quick trip. Okay, Chevron is south of Yerushalayim. For those who've never been there, I hope many of you have. So there is a high place where Shimshon put the gates on the top of the hill as a kind of memorial to this particular act of strength. This was a man who did not do things by halves. He basically, he was doing something big. He did it gadol ba'od, very big. Alright, so far, so good. Shimshon is continuing starting up with the Plishtim, giving them a real sort of run for their money. They cannot remotely contain him. How they're going to deal with it? In the meantime, he's getting more and more enveloped in their society. He is succeeding, but it's taking a toll. This is where the crunch time. Dalet. This is something which we haven't seen before. The language Vayehav. Yehav Ahava. Right? Not only did he see this woman, but he loved her. Okay? There is already not just a physical kind of, whatever word you want to use, a lust or whatever word you want to use in that direction. There is Ahava. There's like a connection. There's an emotional connection here. And what was her name? Shma Delilah. Her name was Delilah. Now, what's happening here is that Shimshon is going a stage further. We are told Delilah was very prominent, maybe a princess of the Plishtim, and Shimshon was stepping it up. Instead of just connecting to the kind of local ladies of the night, or whatever expression you want to use, now he's looking to be more connected to the hierarchy, through Delilah he can get to the Philistine leadership, whatever it was, and she is his ticket to higher things. The problem is, he is too confident, overconfident in his ability to connect. Look what happens. At this point, the relationship becomes known to the Plishtim, that Delilah, and Shimshon are together. And she, of course, being a Philistine lady, has a certain affiliation to that particular group. And the men, the officers, come and say to her, seduce him. Check out, where does his strength come from? We need to subdue this guy, but how do we do it? How can we overcome him? And we want to afflict him, we want to punish him. He's been driving us crazy for years. It'll be worth 1,100 pieces of silver. Alright, this is like reminds a bit of Shakespeare. The pound of flesh and all the rest of it. It's blood money. They're saying to her, give us Shimshon on a plate, or the equivalent, and we will give you all of this money. So she's obviously tempted. What does she do? Batoma Delilah, famous story, Va. Batoma Delilah El Shimshon. So she says to Shimshon, she starts to try and find out, where does this strength really come from? She says, straight out, doesn't beat around the bush, right? What? How are you so strong? Where's it come from? How can you be tied up if he wanted to torture you? She's teasing him, all right? Obviously, she's not assuming that he expects that to happen. But, you know, as they say, Lu Yitsuya, would it be that such a thing would happen? How would we go about it? Right, they're having a bit of a, how should we say, kind of a friendly banter going on here. So he said, and he starts playing with her. He starts toying with her. All right, and again, slightly inappropriate. Slightly inappropriate. It could very well be, you know, he's trying to put her in a place, but, you know, he's playing around. He's basically saying, well, teasing her. If you do this, and then you do that, and you do this, and do that, as if to sort of try and tempt her to do it, or to get people to do it. And of course, it's just basically a tease. Look what he says. So he starts saying, well, take ropes which are not yet dry, right? You make ropes and you wet them, and then obviously once they dry they become very hard, very stiff, whatever, and take them while they're still damp. They've got a lot of give and take in the rope. And tie me up. V'chaliti v'ayiti kachada'am, and then I'll just be any old regular sort of guy and I won't be able to move. All right, and then I think there is this sense of play going on here, right? The kind of it's a game. Nowadays, you know, I don't know, maybe they would sit there and play Monopoly or whatever. In those days, they had a different kind of version of what would be considered this type of discussion. So what happened? So the man, she obviously went back and told the Philistine, and they provided the ropes. Here we are, Delilah. There you go. Seven ropes. And she tied him up. All right? And again, these guys are not necessarily around, or they're waiting for the chance to pounce on Shimshon. And they're obviously waiting outside, and they want to see what happens. And in fact, he says they weren't waiting outside, they were waiting in the room. Obviously, it was like a big tent or whatever, and they were waiting in the corner in the dark, and they were waiting to see what would be they could capture him. But Tomei Alon, and she would say to him, and this would be the sign, you know, that the officers could come out of the corner and attack him. Plishtim alecha shimshon, the plishtim are upon you. All right? And basically, at this point, she says this particular phrase, Vayinatekit yitarim kashe yinatek ptila na'orid becha. Basically, what he did was he just kind of flexed his muscles, a bit like Popeye in the old days, and boom, everything flew up. All of the ropes just basically crumpled, and it was a game. And as far as Shimshon was concerned, he was having a bit of fun with her. There wasn't anything more serious than that, and one assumes that this was part of their kind of more intimate relationship, if you want to call it that. That's the way I've always understood it. And I think we have to be realistic here. Yud. But Toma Delila Shimshon. It's an unbelievable story that it's recorded like this, but that's the way it is. So she says to Shimshon, Hinei, he told me, you messed around with me. In other words, you didn't tell me the truth. Shimshon, you're making fun of me. But to Daberi like Kazavim, telling me lies. Well, Ata Gidon Ali, but Mete Asad. Now, come on, second time round. How can we tie you up? How can we overcome your strength and subdue you? By Yomer Eleon, number two. And he thought this was a great game. I can always picture the smile on his face when he is playing along this particular game. She's trying to be dead serious, and he is just having a blast at the moment. Not for long. But Yomer Eleon, Yudala. So he says to her, let's try a different thing. Let's take some new ropes, tie me up, Asher Nosa Behem Malacha. Never been used for work. In other words, they've never schlepped anything with them. The chaliti vayiti chada'am, those new ropes, they'll do it. I will be weakened to the point that I'll be like any other commoner gardener individual, and you'll be able to capture me, if that's what you want to do. Vatikach delila avotim chadashim. So she prepared these new ropes. Vatasrei behem, and she tied him up. And again, you know, what's going to happen? Vatomei lav plishtim alecha shimshon. And again, she's said the key words, plishtim are upon you, as if to see what will happen. Is he going to be able to break the bonds? And the answer is yes. And of course, the people were waiting to capture him. For Orev Yosheb Bechedah, they're still waiting in the room, trying to see what will be the enemy. And Shimshon just broke away from these ropes like a little thread. As far as he was concerned, this was an incredible, how should we say, a real bit of fun for him, and very frustrating for her. But Toma Delila Shimshon, the third time, An Heine Talt Bi Etalta Bi Vataberi Like Samim. How much longer are you going to mess me around, she said, and you're going to tell me lies? This is already twice you've done it. Hagida Li Bama Teoser. I need to know, how can we subdue you? Vayomer Elayim Targi Et Sheva Machlofo Roshi Masachet. Basically, it's an interesting concept that he's already getting more and more, how should we say, worn down by her question. And he now sort of refers to his hair, but he says, you've got to take my hair and sort of tie it in rollers. Okay, I think masachet means, it says here in the English, you weave seven locks of my head to the roller. Okay, which is kind of an interesting. The word masachet, obviously, we know from the Gemara, because every tractate of Gemara is called a masachet. But I'm not sure if this is actually the same word. It may come from the same root. Roller meaning you roll your way through page after page of Talmud. I'm not sure. Never thought of it like that. But basically, he's already getting a bit closer to the truth. Because obviously his hair does represent something. But is it the strength in the hair, which is as normally the way this story is explained? Or is it what the hair represents? Okay, and that's something which we're going to see in a minute. But we're going to try and understand. So, she ties up his hair. What does she do? You done it. But so she took some sort of peg, and she tied up his hair, and she said, the same expression again. The Philistines are upon you. This is the third time. So he was asleep and he woke up. And he basically plucked out all of the the stuff that was holding him down. What do I think of, if you've seen the movie Gulliver's Travels, there's been various versions of that film. There's a recent version when they try and subdue Gulliver. They tie, you know, the Lilliputians, as they're called, they try and tie him down with these ropes, right? It's a similar kind of thing here. And they also try to tie down his hair. That's part of what they try to do. And I think this is what she's doing here. But of course, it's all a big joke for Shimshon, and he just basically shakes his head, and everything goes flying. And she is beside herself. Teva. But Tomer Elav, Ech Toma Avtin. Now she starts using her femininity. And her femininity works in this case in a very powerful way. All right? And again, we're going to be very, very upfront about this. I don't want to sort of skirt the issue, pardon the expression. The reality is that she is really, really going to test him for everything that she can put into this particular relationship. And you'll see what I mean. She says to him, "You said to me, Shimshon, after that you love me. How can you say you love me?" she says. But your heart is not with me. Because three times, Zeshalosh Pa'amim, he told me. You told me lies three times already. And I still do not know what is the source of your great strength. She is at the point where she is beginning to, you know, sort of use her femininity against it. The ultimate weapon. What did she do? That they were having relations and she refused him. Alright? And of course, at this point, Shimshon says, this can't go on. Okay? I know that I was teasing her, but now that she is refusing me, he feels very sort of his manhood has been a compromise, if that's the way to describe it. And look at Rashi says, "Vata'altseu dechakto ve'elo dimayon," meaning she's oppressing him. She is now putting pressure. She is putting pressure on him by refusing to have relations with him. And at this point, there Shimshon decides, "All right, I'm up to my neck already. I'm going to have to say something." The end of Pasuk Tet Zayin, "Vatitzan afsho lamut." He was so upset about it that he was on the point of death, vexed to death. In other words, not he was going to die from this, but he was very upset about the way she was behaving. So she got her own back. And of course, at this point, Shimshon, there's a little sense, as Reb Dessler explains, we've explained before, where he kind of loses his perspective. All right, all the time, we know Shimshon is a holy guy. He tries to maintain a standard. But at this point in time, she is overwhelming him with her total sort of sexuality, her femininity, everything she is using against him. Now listen to this. Yud Zayin. Vayaged lo et kol libo. At this point, he tells her everything. Vayomer lo mara lo ola roshi. I've never shaved my head. In other words, I've never cut my hair. Ki nazir lahim ani mibeten imi. I was made to an osif from the moment I was born. In fact, mibeten from the womb. Before I was born, we know the story. Im gulachti basami menekochi. If I will be shaved and my strength will then go away, b'chaliti v'ayiti k'chaladam, I will be as weak as any other man. And here, all of a sudden, he has said something completely different. Not messing around with ropes and rollers and who knows what. He's spilled the beans, as they say. But yudche, v'tera delila ki higid light kol libo. Alright, Dvorim Hayotzim in Aleh. It's a very interesting concept. You know when someone is talking sincerely. Right? I always argue one of the great, great strengths of, for instance, the Chabad movement around the world, wherever you go, is the fantastic sincerity, almost without exception, of those particular couples where you meet them, you know, and cried. I cried when I heard about what happened in Mumbai, you know, that this couple that really had such a unbelievable sort of sort of description of who they were, and were killed by these evil people and the terrorists and everything that happened there. These are amazing individuals, and you feel it when you come across it. If you're traveling in Europe and you're stuck in Venice for a Shabbat, what are you going to do? Where are you going to get kosher food? You don't have OU in Venice. It doesn't exist. So there's Chabad there, and you go to the Chabad guy, and he'll set up food. Where he gets the food from, I don't know. I think they ship it in from Israel. And it's unbelievable thing that they do that. Unbelievable. Around the world. And this is always reminding me. The idea when you sense what is really min halev, something that comes from the heart. When you listen to your rabbi week in and week out, but one week you realize, wow, that was an incredible speech. Because it wasn't just saying something, he felt it. And when he said it with feeling, you feel it. Okay? That is what's going on here. Delilah realizes that until now, maybe he's been messing with her. At this point in time, wow. Kolibo. She realizes his heart is, you know, he's wearing his heart, as they say in English, on his sleeve. Literally. Vatishlach vatikra l'sanei plishtim le'mor. Now she realizes that she can get the whole plan into action. She calls back the Saranim, the officers of the Plishtim. Presumably they've gone away in disgust, you know, they didn't want to stay around. So she says, come back, guys. Alu hapam, one more time. Ki gid li et kol libo. He's told me everything. Ve'alu ve'leo Saranei Plishtim ve'yalu ha'kesem yadam. And they brought the money. So as sincere as, you know, he thought she might have been to her, to him, she was prepared to sell him out for a few coppers or a few pieces of silver. What an unbelievably awful person she must have really been. How he fell for her is one of the great mysteries again. Because it says, he loved her. Wasn't just a question of using her, this was a question of some sort of emotional attachment. One of the mysteries, because you know, you wonder how he would actually even remotely think that she would be loyal to him, but he obviously thought she would be. Look at Yutet, Vatiyashneo al Birkeah. At this point in time, he falls asleep on her knees. Literally, she kind of rocks him to sleep. It's all very graphic. Vatikra le'ish, she calls to the man, to the barber. Vatigalach et sheva machlefot rosho, and he cuts off seven rows of hair. Why the number seven keeps appearing here, I really don't know. Maybe it was the hairstyle of those days, I'm not quite sure. But she basically removes, the barber gives him a marine haircut, basically. Vatocha lanoto, and she began to afflict him. In other words, she tried to see whether he would be able to, you know, she started fighting, whatever she did with him. But Yosef kocha me'alam, and he couldn't resist it. He could do nothing about it. He was helpless. Famous story. Vatomer plishtim alecha Shimshon, she cries out to him, and of course he wakes up, and he's missing his hair, poor guy, feeling a bit on the cold side, I guess. And in the meantime, the plishtim come in, Vayomer etzei kapam babam, and he thought that he would just throw them out, you know, like he has done till now. Ve'inoer, I will shake them away. V'hu lo yodak yashem sar me'olam. Now this is the key to the whole story. That in the nezirut, as much as it is reflected in the hair, it is a statement of spirituality. There is what was called in Hebrew, koach fizi, but koach ruchani. He had physical strength, but that physical strength was coming from a deeper spiritual point. And that was compromised, that was gone. Once his hair went, the koach fizi, the koach ruchani, represented by the hair, the zirut, his relationship to God was compromised, then all the physical strength left him. And that is the tragedy of Shimshon. Of course, at this point, the Plishtim are overjoyed, and their immediate reaction is to put him into a position of torture. They try to make fun of him, they mock him, and they blind him, which is terrible. Of course, Chazal say he followed his eyes too much, and he lost his sight because of that. So the blindness was like a midah connecting midah, measure for measure. Look what happened. Chazalim, Yechazu Plishtim, they took hold of him, they immediately blinded him. Because obviously for them, if he can't see where he's going, he doesn't have vision, then he can't attack them. That's what they thought. Little did they know. But Yerido Oto Azata took him back to Gaza, which is where, again, you know, this kind of a place which he went back to, and he, you know, again, it's kind of a message to him that he was a bit too free and easy when he was there last time. The Yasru Banachushtaim, they bound him in chains. Vayehi Tochen Bebeit Asirim, and he was grinding wheat or whatever he was doing in the prison. He acted like a mule. He was acting like pulling these big wheels which would grind, you know, sort of the wheat, etc. The rabbis play on this, and the rabbis say, which is pretty shocking. Rashi just says, Rabbeinu Pirshim, Rashi Pirshim. He doesn't tell you. Rashi doesn't want to go into it, but he says that the Plishtim was so in awe of Shimshon and his strength, his physical strength. They knew nothing about the spiritual side. They didn't know about him. They were just so in awe of him that when they saw him there, they would actually bring, the husbands would bring their wives, how sick their society was, and he would be told, Shimshon, you have to impregnate this woman and make her pregnant with a child. And this was Shimshon's, you know, fate, if you want to call it that. Pretty terrible, really awful thought. And again, Shimshon understood that maybe at this point in time, he had gone way too far with his own sort of compromises in the Philistine arena, and he was now being compromised by them. This is, for him, a punishment from God. It's pretty terrible and pretty amazing. Look what happened. The end of the story, as equally bad as the story is till now, the end is so, on the one hand, sad, you know, tragic, but very uplifting. Look what happened. Kafbet. His hair began to grow back, as it would. But of course, for him, this was not just a sign of physical growth. He said, Koch Ruchani. Maybe his spiritual strength was coming back. The Sarnei Plishtim Nesu Lizbal Zevakadol Dagan Ra'em were told that the Plishtim made some sort of party for Dagon, which was their god. That's the name of the god. Dagon, Lashon Dagan, which refers to wheat. Obviously, it's something to do with the wheat harvest. Or the Simcha. And they just had a party to celebrate capturing Shimshon, doing what they did. Bayomer, Natana Lahainu Biodeinu, Eight Shimshon Ayveinu, Shimshon, our enemy, has been given over by our God. Dagon, thank you so much. We're going to have a party. We're going to have basically an orgy. We're going to enjoy praising you with all this crazy behavior. Now look what happened here. By Yiroto Ha'am, by Halwet Elohim. People saw him and they started praising their God. And of course for Shimshon this was very bitter, because he realized that he now was a source for them to become more convinced that their God was mightier than the God of Israel. And this was something that Shimshon couldn't stand. Ki Abru, because they were saying, Matana Lahim Yodin et Oveinim. Our God has handed over our enemy, the Et Makriv Atseda, the destroyer of our land, the terminator, the Asher Hirba Nachalaleda, the one who killed many of our people. Right? So basically, that is the praise to their God. At this point in time, Shimshon becomes inspired. He knows he's going to die. He knows they're going to kill him. They're not going to keep him alive for very long, because, you know, that's their kind of society. They'll torture him for a bit, and then they'll publicly execute him, probably. So, as they say, in for a penny, in for a pound. It's basically, at this point in time, he has got nothing to lose. But they were all getting nicely sloshed, inebriated, drunk. And they wanted to humiliate Shimshon even more, and they wanted him to play. They wanted just to see whether he could, you know, they'd throw a ball at him, see if he could catch him. Of course, he's blind, he can't see it. So this would be great sport for them, and for Shimshon it would be total humiliation. By Yikra Shimshon in Beit HaSirit, they called to him, and he just sort of made funny before them. You know, he behaved in a very kind of sort of strange way. And he was standing between the pillars. At this point, Shimshon was inspired. He realized that here is an opportunity to bring, you know, sort of a final vengeance against the Plishtim, with, of course, the problem that he would bring his own death about in the circumstance, but he was prepared to do this, as they say, on Kiddush Hashem. Listen to this. Vayomer Shimshon el Hanach, Hamachzik biyodo. So Shimshon said to the lad, somebody was there to hold his hand. So, you know, he needs to lead him, to take him in the direction he wanted to go. And he said to this lad, Anichoti Limi, the Hamishenia, that's a modern famous story, just make me put my hands next to the pillars, so I can feel them. Asher Abayit Necholalei, in which the house is resting on, the support of the whole palace. Alright? But if you saw the movie, the Hollywood version of it, this was an enormous palace which had a roof and a sort of different floors, according to their particular suggestion, and there were literally thousands of plishtim merrymaking all over the place. And the Esha'ed Aleihem, he says, I just want to lean on these pillars. So the lad didn't think anything of it, he did it. So Abayit Malei Anashim Anashim, the place was full of men and women. Bashama Kosani Plishtim, the whole government was there. So this was an opportunity to kill everybody in one shot. 3,000 people on the roof, right? All killing themselves in laughter at the humiliation of Shimshon. What a story. Kavchet. And here comes this famous thing. I think Miami Boys have made a song out of it, for those who are into Miami Boys. This is not of recent years, probably maybe even before you guys were even born. But the record still does exist. In those days it was one of those, you know, big things that went around. Nowadays, of course, you have these little machines and away you go. Listen to this. Unbelievable story. And it gets me every time. But Yikra Shimshon Hashem Ve'yomar. So he cries out to God. And he says, Adonai Elohim, O Lord, Zachreinina, remember me, Chazkeinina, make me strong, Ach HaPam Azeh Elohim, O Lord, this once. Be'inokmo nekam achad mishtei enayim mipishtim, at least I can avenge one of my two eyes. Alright, in other words, he understood. Losing one eye, he appreciated now the reason why he was blinded. But he felt that maybe to lose two eyes, that was maybe extreme, and he wanted to have an excuse to, as they say, midah keneged midah, to go back against the plishtim. Unbelievable tefillah. And that's his whole tefillah. Powerful in the extreme. And you can see him standing there with everyone making fun of him, and his heart goes to God, and Hashem listens. Listen to this, Chavtet. Vayilfot Shimshon et shnei amudei ataveh, and he grabs hold of these two pillars. Asher habayit nechon aleihem, and did he bring them towards him? Did he push them away? Most of the suggestions are that he pushed them outwards, but, you know, whichever way you want to understand it. Vayisamech aleihem, and he was leaning against them. Echa biyimino vecha bismolo, one to the right hand, one to the left. And what did he do? Vayomer Shimshon, the most famous words. Tambot navshim plishtim, let my soul die with the plishtim. In other words, I know I'm going to die, but a lot of those guys are going to die with me. Vayet bakoach, and he pushed. Vayipal abayit al sranim al kol ha'am asher bo, the whole house came down. He brought the house down literally. Vayu ameitim asher mit b'moto, rabim asher mit b'chayav, and he ended up killing more people in his death than he ever did while he was alive. Thousands upon thousands of plishtim, the whole sort of aristocracy, the hierarchy, all done away with in one fell swoop. Lamadala, vayerdu echa. Obviously, afterwards there was a tremendous shock in the Philistine world, and one doesn't really hear from the Philistines for a bit of time. Obviously, this was something that knocked the sails out of them completely. And the problem is, what about giving Shimshon the burial rites? Right? As I mentioned to you, as I always, when I talk about Shimshon, I compare him to the Israeli spy, who is still not being given burial rites to this day. The Syrians are so mad at what he did 45 years ago. They have never allowed the body to return to Israel. This is so below any acceptable behavior. I mean, look what's going on in Syria at the moment, and you'll understand what you're dealing with. Not a very user-friendly government, really not. Lamed Aleph, but in those days, the family of Shimshon decided to retrieve the body. Vayeredu echa v'chol beit aviyu, they came down. Vayisu oto, they carried him up. Vayalu, vayikbro oto beit tzara bein ashtay, he was given a royal burial between those two places, bekever Menachavim, in the family plot of his father Manoah. Vahu shafat et Yisrael esrim shana, and in case you forget, he was the judge for 20 years. Wow. Unbelievable story. And again, the question that we really need to understand, and in so many ways, what is going on here, particularly with Delilah, how did he allow himself to get to this point where she totally overwhelmed him? What happened? What was the sort of crux of this particular story? I want to give you this page. We'll go through some of these points now, and we'll continue them probably on Thursday, if you just want to hand that out. There are a few more here. It's an unbelievable story. It's uplifting, but it's tremendously tragic at the same time. What exactly happened to Shimshon at this particular point? We're going to look at section A. Section B, with Delilah, we'll spend time on next time. But I want to get through a bit of section A, just to give you some idea of what is really going on here. I hope you all have the page. It should be coming around. Thank you. Have a look at this. We're trying to explain, thank you. We're trying to explain Shimshon's odd behavior. We know that he wanted to integrate, to infiltrate. That's what he was trying to do. Thanks. But the problem is, how do we explain his style? What was he really doing? Listen to this on the right hand side. He says, La'acha maka belechi. After he destroyed that 1,000 people with the bone, with the jawbone, right? Something mentioned at the beginning. Ein Shimshon Yoshev b'menucha. You think that would be enough for anybody. Alright? He's brought that kind of destruction on the enemy, but Shimshon never sits still. Adayin mamshichu lirot et yudo behit garut plishtim. He's still looking for ways to anger, to upset the plishtim. Einu choshesh klal alechet levado. He's not worried about going alone. Lo shum haganah, without any protection. Le'ir shekula plishtim. He can now walk around wherever he wants. He is feared by everybody. Yodehu al nachon shekava hishtadu l'tofso. He knows they tried to capture him a number of times. Barak b'neis nitzal b'yodehim, and he was saved by God. Ava b'kev v'yelek shimshon azata, so he still goes to Aza. The question, of course, is why he goes to Aza if he's always got to be saved by a miracle. The rule is ein sodcha l'nes. We don't rely on miracles. But in Shimshon's case, as we said, he is becoming a bit overconfident. God is always on my side. Alright, this is something you hear in the Catskills every summer. Never. The people driving around in that particular part of the world, the policeman stops them when they're doing 100 on a road, which they should be doing maybe 20. And the question, the famous quote, God is on my side. Sorry guys, you still get a ticket. That's the way it goes. It's very, very interesting. Listen to this, second paragraph. Batuachu bezrat Hashem, he knows God will help him. Ki hare b'shlichuto ole. He's obviously doing the agency of God. Nazir lekim is a nozir. Bukavah kam apamim tzalchal abruch Hashem. He had the spirit of God. Ilu hayastav gibor. If we're going to say that he's just a strong guy, bal ometz shirim, he's just a muscle man. Ein lecha ivelet gedolah mizon la'amid gurotom bevilcham pav nosefet kalud rosh chazon. In other words, nobody in their right mind will put themselves into a position of danger just to see whether they can get out of it. You know, it's not about strength. It's not about physical strength. Shimshon is much more about attacking the plishtim with a kind of spiritual awareness, a spirituality that he is connecting to God. He's a nozer and what the nazir represents. And that is Shimshon's whole derech. That's what he does. And he was successful. He took the plishtim away from attacking Am Yisrael because they were so worried about every time he turned up. What is he going to do next? That they forgot about bringing armies and attack against the Jewish people. And he was successful, but he became too, familiar with his own strength. Listen to this, the third paragraph. B'chol zot, t'chilat kilkolo ba'aza. When he started going off the rails, it was in Gaza. She'tichsiv ayelech shimshon azata, v'yasha mishazona. B'maya kilkolo. So the question is, why was he going off the rails? What did he do? And v'ein lomah, Shakilkul haya biyota nachrit. And this paragraph discusses the whole question: was she converted? Was that the problem? And you're saying that he did something bad because he didn't convert her. Says Rav Levi here in his notes, that's not the case, because we know that according to the Rambam at least, he says absolutely all the women that he came into contact with, he converted. Now again, you know, I can sort of accept that, but it does give me a problem, particularly with Delilah. Delilah, would she have really wanted to become Jewish? That's probably the last thing she would have done. Now, again, you could say Shimshon would have said to her, why don't you go for a swim in the Jordan? Or wherever. Go for a swim in one of the rivers. Go for a swim in the Mediterranean. And, you know, that would be swimming in a mikveh, even though she doesn't realize it. But again, can you have such a conversion when the person doesn't even know what they're doing? All right? So it's a bit of a challenge, this whole concept. But as I said, there's another approach, which is basically to say that he was doing an avera, but he was doing it for the sake of God. And this is a very special thing, Aveira Lishma. But Rabbi Levi doesn't bring that. Go to the next paragraph after that, about halfway now. Ava. Achreva nazu, alena nasol avin gamke, madua nikshal bekach, lulakach itcha zatim, bederech ishut. Why did Shimshon now just take this woman in Gaza without any sort of marriage concept? He just basically says he took her, and that was it. What's going on here? Beginning, we know he had a marriage, Sheva Brochas, you know, for 7 days, he had a party every day, and that's what he did in the first one. This one, No, everything seems to have been immediate. And it's very strange. And look at the next paragraph. Navi gam al shela zuet hesperu shel agon tzadik Rav Dessler. So again, the idea of what Rav Dessler says. And very, very simply, we'll just go through a bit of this paragraph going down in the indented paragraph, the smaller print. Atana itai shalach batai yashute. Shimshon, again, the basic thing was what he saw, he thought was right, is what guided him to do what he did. Whatever he saw and he had the feeling that this was correct, he went after what he saw. Now the problem is that he became overconfident. He didn't necessarily have the backing of Hashem in every situation. And this is where Shimshon makes the mistakes. Shetzirev bechinat yashrut shelo, tahayinu shenitga'eh biyashruto. He became overconfident, haughty, in his own sense of correctness. V'harei gava bebechinat merit. And this is pride, which is from the source of rebellion. In other words, I know better than God. And even though Shimshon would never verbalize it like that, but that seems to be what happened. Ubatzino Dava Pele, says Rabbi Dessler, there's something amazing. Hashem Shimshon Ishtadel Izaheb Batzne Lechet, Lebal Yitgeh. Shimshon the whole time was careful not to be haughty, not to stick his nose up in the air, to be snob. Hare Kashe Shisat Ariyeh, Lo Sipeh Lishum Adam. He rips the lion down the middle, he doesn't tell anybody. So he was very quiet. Bafilo Lo Lo Rav, doesn't tell his parents. Bechol Zob Binakudat Dakasha Bedaka. But there is a point in his soul, nitga'eh biyashrut eina, that he became over-reliant on his ability to follow what he saw. Mishum ze lo yigia ma'alato le'asod Mashiach. That lost him the title to be the Messiah. It's quite amazing. Quite incredible. To be Mashiach, you had to be someone who did not have any sense of over-dramatization, over-reliance on your own understanding on, you know, he became, for want of a better word, he became haughty in his own ability. He thought that he could conquer the world. Not good. It's not the attribute which Mashiach has to have. V'rak hechel oshit Yisrael, but he certainly saved Israel. Hochel, he began the process with lo gomar, but he didn't finish. B'nekudat akazo nifgamash lemuto shel Hashem Shemayim Shalom. His whole Hashem Shemayim, doing it for the sake of God, was blemished, and this is why he lost the strength to be able to come back and to overcome the plishtim. If you just look on the other side, and we'll be finished in 2 minutes, the second column at the top, right, I haven't turned over the page, it's just on the same page on the left hand side. This man who was a nozir, but he wasn't quite as, as sincere as he should have been. Lo haya od yachol litgaber al yitzro, lamo b'sayon. He couldn't overcome his basic inclination. But in kalkulu ma'asav, this is where he starts going wrong. Oto yetze nit'av shaya bo me'etzim tivo. He had this inclination when he was born. V'asher l'shem shmirato mipanav. That's why he became an ozit, to protect him from the character which he inherited. He became a nozir for his whole line. And that's how he got to the point where he could afflict the plishtim. Who should gaber alav b'shat v'filato v'madregato ilanit? And this is what afflicted him when he lost his high level, his high spiritual level. What was saying in a nutshell, which is so, so difficult, is that Shimshon became too reliant on his own ability to overcome the enemy. He thought, as they say, that he could do anything. And he's still a human being. The lesson of Shimshon is really a lesson about humanity. At the end of the day, we may think we're infallible. We may think we can overcome anything. We may think we can do anything. And the answer is, yeah, we try, we can do whatever we want. But with a certain level of humility which is required, because the bottom line is that Shimshon always realized this, but in the process it became forgotten for him that really it was with God's help that he succeeded. Without the God of Israel helping him, Shimshon was done for. And this unfortunately became a point where Shimshon compromised himself with the woman, with the Zonah that we read about at the beginning of chapter 16. And by the time you get to Delilah, it's almost guaranteed that there's going to be a terrible falling of Shimshon. But, and this is the beautiful thing at the end, not completely without salvation. He has an element. He understands the element of Tefillah. Please listen. And he understands the element of, as much as he can, the element of Tshuva. He does understand that he can turn it around, but not completely. Very sad. Any thoughts about Shimshon? Does he rate on your list of Jewish heroes? He's, he might have been, before we started learning about him, just let me make this final comment. Before we started learning about him, he might have been up there, the top three of heroes. I mean, I suppose David would have to be in the top, in terms of, a warrior of Israel. Shimshon, with this whole story, I think he goes down to about number 8. He may not even feature in the top 10. I'm just not sure anymore. But again, reaction. Everyone's been very quiet today. It must be the masters, I'm sure. What are we going to say? Are we going to say that we feel for this guy? We have this sense of disappointment about him. What he did was right, but at the end of the day, he was wrong. What are we going to say about him? What do you feel?
It's 1,000% understandable and humanistic, and it's the only way that we could actually compare ourselves to him and learn a lesson from him is by seeing his mistakes. And
yeah.
There's
yeah.
no one that we can look at and think that he's all good. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, we see all of his flaws.
Excellent. And this is a theme in Tanakh. Tanakh is telling us that our heroes are heroes, but you know what? They're still human beings. And we must never forget that, and we must always remember that, because then we, and that's the beautiful point you made, we can then relate to them. We can compare. Right? The Catholics have a big problem. Let me explain to you the problem of the Catholics very quickly. The Catholics believe that the Pope is infallible. They believe that the Pope cannot do anything wrong. And that's a problem, because when is a human being? By nature, human beings can make mistakes. And boy, the popes over the years have made incredible mistakes. But the Catholic tradition is, that's what they believe. Please listen. The Pope is infallible. We don't have infallibility for anybody. It could be the greatest rabbi, it could be the greatest tzaddik. But you know what? His greatness should allow him to admit that he does get it wrong occasionally. Shimshon seems to have got to a point where he could never, this is the final comment, he could never admit that he had done anything wrong. He couldn't admit that his greatness was limited. Wow, this is kind of powerful stuff. Go away and think about it. It's very moving. His tefillah is phenomenal. The thing about Shimshon, which I get so inspired, is that even in that moment of Yish, we would all give it up, he never gave up. He davened. He realized, I can save the day, I can help Am Yisrael, and you know what? He really succeeded. Fantastic character. Next time we'll do a little bit about Delilah, but please read ahead, chapter 17 and 18. To be continued with Rav Hashem Thursday. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.